Oh, it's such an honor, Danny, to be a part of this amazing podcast you're doing here. And it's just really cool to be talking about this book.
Oh, thank you so much. That's so lovely to hear.
That was so fun.
Yeah, it sure was, especially the quiz. Thanks for preparing that for me.
No, it's a pleasure. You're brilliant. You're a brilliant interviewer, man.
Hey, thank you for your wonderful questions.
I really liked your questions.
Best with these things, just turn into a conversation.
Yeah. Oh, I love it. Yeah, you obviously got the book.
Good on you for fighting the good fight, too.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
Oh, thank you so much. And thank you for your lovely review. I really appreciate it.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you, guys.
I love your enthusiasm. I just think it's a brilliant thing you're doing, a podcast about, you know, books, and you do a lot of great interviews, so I'm really honoured to be part of it.
I so enjoy listening to the podcast. I love it. And, and it does just feel like you're having a chat with your mate.
You are listening to Words and Nerds, talking to your favourite authors.
Jacobson grew up in Darwin and the far north coast of New South Wales, but now lives in Sydney, where she works in TV news production at the ABC. She has a degree in journalism and has worked as a question writer for TV game shows and as an in-house script storyliner and script editor for several Australian television dramas. She's the author of CBCA shortlisted Yellow, and today we talk about The Build-Up Season, a powerful exploration of family and identity set against the humid build-up to the wet season in Darwin. It's an important read, but the book does deal with issues of domestic violence and may be a trigger for some people. Please take care while listening. I'm your host, Danny V.
Hi, Megan. It's so lovely to have you on the podcast today. It's great to talk to you again.
Hello. Thank you so much for having me.
I love The Build-Up Season. I think it's such an important novel, so I want to spend a bit of time with this novel today. And the only thing I wish is that I'd read it when I was a teenager.
Oh, I'm so glad that you liked it. I'm very fond of that novel, and it's really special to me.
You can tell just from the beginning, you know, from the character. I thought as I was reading it how much love you must have put into Illy Piper. And right from the opening page, her voice is so strong and authentic. She's lost, she's vulnerable, she's tough, and she's been through a lot in her 17 years. Where did she come from?
Oh, it's so funny. I was trying to write another book at the time, and it just, the voice wasn't coming to me. I had the story all set, and I just had this character come to me, and she had this curly hair and half a shaved head, and she just sort of scowling, but kind of like sticking her tongue out and laughing. And it felt like she was grabbing my hand and wanted me to follow. And I was just like, go away. Like, I want to write my other book. And she just wouldn't go away. So I thought one day, well, as a writing exercise, I'll just write her voice for, you know, 20 minutes to try and get it out of my system. And I couldn't stop, and I realised then and there that I had to give up the story that I was trying to write and go with her.
That's an amazing story. I love that when characters just kind of take over because they're in you somewhere, and she must have been so powerful, and she comes off the page so powerfully too.
Yeah, she was. It was frustrating because I was trying to shoo her away. At the same time, when I decided to go with it, it was almost as though I wasn't writing it, she was writing it.
And she's a character that won't be shooed away, right?
No, she won't. I think it's funny. I've had, I think she's quite polarizing. I think she is charming and hilarious. But other people think that she can be quite abrasive. So I think it sort of depends on... It depends on sort of who you are and how you look at her, but I think that she's very charming, and I kind of wanted to stay with her voice.
Oh, yeah, and I love complex characters who are at times unlikable. I think that's the point of literature. I mean, if they start really likable and nothing's wrong, where have they got to go?
Exactly, and I mean, all humans are unlikable there's some part of us, and if somebody is completely perfect, then that's an unlikable trait in and of itself. It doesn't seem real.
I love what Melina Machetta said on the front cover of the book, and she says, Illy Piper is fierce and vulnerable and so authentic. I loved her. And I just couldn't agree more with that quote. I thought she was just such a beautiful character. With all her flaws, I think that's what made the book really special, because she has these perceptions of, you know, what her mother's gone through, and then she begins to take on this greater sense of empathy because of what happens to her.
Yeah, I mean, Melina is the loveliest person in the whole entire world. She was my childhood hero. I loved Looking for Ella Brandy. And the fact that I've got to know her as an adult just it blows my mind. And she, you know, people say don't meet your heroes. She's actually exceeded expectations.
That must be a rarity, but I'm glad.
Oh, she's so lovely. But yeah, with Illy, it's sort of, I was just sort of thinking about my teenage self and how you think that you know everyone and you know their motivations, and you know, you think that you don't understand that people are complex, and especially that age when you realize that your parents are people too. I think that's really it happens at about 17, and I think it's a really sort of important growing up and realization.
Yeah, and it's kind of terrifying as well to realise that your parents aren't perfect and they aren't as strong or as you have pictured them, but they've been the people that have protected you through life, and all of a sudden you're like, wow, they haven't got their life together. How have they been protecting me?
Yeah, I know. And also, I mean, I have this line, and it's about like how mother crocodiles carry their young around in their mouth and it looks like they're eating them. But sometimes you have to look past the teeth and the scales to realize that they're protecting their young. And I remember being 17 and having so many fights with my mother and, you know, thinking that she was attacking me. And it's only with hindsight that you look back and you're like, oh, no, she was protecting me.
And that crocodile analogy works so well with the novel, didn't it, the setting?
Oh, yeah, I know. I love Darwin. I grew up there and it was so wonderful to be able to return to it, physically visiting my family, but also sitting in Sydney and metaphorically just kind of going back into that space in my imagination and, you know, rollicking around with the green tree frogs and the cane toads and the crocodiles and the, you know, the sweat and the mangoes.
I think it's so funny that Darwin, whenever a novel is set in Darwin, I mean, I instantly think of Maestro by Peter Goldsworthy, which is one of my all-time favourite novels. And Darwin is just such an incredible place to set a book because I think it just becomes this life and character of its own.
Yeah, it's crazy how many people haven't gone there. It is the most Aussie place that there is. It's unashamedly itself, which I love about it.
Yeah, I remember when I went there, I kind of went there with no expectations and I went away blown away. You know, I just couldn't believe how magical and spiritual the place was, and it was an incredible experience.
Yeah, I wanted to capture that. I wanted to capture sort of how high the sky is and the redness of the earth and the wildness of the landscape.
And I think it really then worked really well and reflected all the characters and what they were going through and their inner turmoil as well, I think.
Yeah, definitely. And I mean, it's one of those places where people do go to run away. Mm. So it was kind of the perfect setting for the book. I just, as soon as the character came to me, I knew that that's where the book had to be set. And, you know, I drew on a lot of my experience. My brother-in-law takes me out fishing in the Mary River. And there's a scene there where they go fishing in the Mary River, and it's pretty much what happened to me. It's just you're out there and there's tiny tinny and these crocodile heads, which are half the size of the boat, are just sort of emerging from the water, and the crocodiles would be double the size of the boat, and you're just there going, it could kill me if it wanted to.
I've got to say, yeah. I was quite scared reading that.
Everyone just rolls with it, and, you know, I didn't get eaten.
You're okay. They always say, you know, don't judge a book by its cover, but the cover is quite beautiful. It's pink. And I sort of went into the novel with no expectations. I like when I can go into a book without any judgments or expectations. You can't always do that because of marketing or what people have told you, etc. But I could with this. And so when I opened it from the very first page, I was so pleasantly surprised with its grittiness and how raw it is.
Yeah, it's quite funny. I love that cover. It's like a little, it's beautiful. It's like an artwork. I'm so happy with what Penguin have delivered, because you don't really get a say. They just, the publishers come to you and they're like, we've come up with a cover. And I'm sure if you don't like it, I guess you could push back. But every time I've just been blown away by how much I love the covers and how perfect they are. But it did make me laugh because Illy Piper hates the color pink.
Yeah, that's funny actually, but it's a beautiful cover. And
it reflects the Darwin sunset. Yeah,
it does, absolutely. And the earthy kind of colour, even though it is pink, it's got that kind of earthiness to it, I think.
There is that lightning as well and the rain, and it's kind of has layers of resonance to the story there. Once you read the story, you'll kind of understand.
The novel, we're not going to give away any spoilers. We don't like to do that, because we like people to be able to choose when they want to listen to the podcast and read the book.
Oh, I know. It's so hard to talk about.
Yeah, I know. But we'll kind of skirt around things and do our best. The novel is about domestic violence. I don't think that's a spoiler. I think that's pretty clear from the very first page. Mm-hmm. And I think this novel has the power to resonate with people. And like I said, I only wish I'd read this novel when I was a young girl. And I actually was thinking before, I think it's compulsory reading for young people, because so much of the behavior were these little hidden things that you could always justify if you love someone enough or if you were young enough. You know, and without giving anything away, I mean, it's pretty textbook when people question your whereabouts, or they invade your privacy, or they take control over your phone, or they try to bring you down, or they're jealous. And all these things can be justified away as, oh, they just love me, or they're just taking care of me, or they're just sad. But I think it's so important to know that someone doesn't actually need to physically harm you for it to be an unhealthy, manipulative, or violent relationship.
Yeah, exactly. People always go, oh, you know, they see women in violent relationships, and you often hear people saying, why didn't she leave? And you kind of go, well, it didn't start off like that. It builds up. People don't start a relationship with somebody who hits them straight away. I was in an abusive relationship when I was in my early 20s, and so this book is sort of everything I wanted to say to my younger self, because you don't realize that, you know, abusers aren't necessarily the monster myth that you see portrayed. Like, they are complicated humans who can be lovely as well. But yeah, it's a sliding scale, and your line in the sand, you know, goes back further and further and further. And I was reading a lot of YA books where it had controlling behaviors, and it was seen as romantic.
Mm-hmm.
The love interest getting angry if the protagonist talked to another guy, or, you know, going through their phone messages, and it's only because, you know, they cared about them, or they wanted to know where they were. And I was reading this and just thinking, young girls like me when I was young would be reading this and going, oh no, that's what romance is, and it just means that they love you. And because young people don't have that relationship experience, they don't. Maybe they wouldn't necessarily realize what is crossing the line. So I really wanted to take those tropes of, you know, guys getting overly jealous and kind of flip it on its head and say, no, this isn't romantic. This isn't behavior that you should be putting up with.
And you're absolutely right. Pop culture does tend to, or mainstream kind of books or series, they do tend to romanticize it, and it's so dangerous to normalize this behavior.
Oh yeah, definitely. There's definitely no gender has a patent on that behavior. That's for sure.
Yeah. Have you received much feedback about the book resonating with others?
Yeah, definitely. The feedback that I have got, especially people who had found themselves in relationships like that in the past, have emailed me and said how deeply that book affected them, which just means the world to me.
Mm. It's interesting that you said that you were in an abusive relationship yourself. I mean, as was I, and it was funny because I was debating how much of my own experiences I should share when I was doing the interview questions. And I just thought, it had to be from a real place because all the things that were in the novel were just too real to be made up or researched from the internet. You know, I think as a person having gone through that as well, I thought, yeah, nah, this is too real. This isn't just made up entirely.
And it's crazy how common it is.
Yeah.
I mean, I didn't want to bring it up for a long time as well because it just, there's shame around it and stigma. But it's funny because when I was writing the book, I was telling my friends about it, and it was uncanny how many intelligent, strong-willed women I know stood up and said, oh no, I was in an abusive relationship as well, me too. And nobody went to the police about it. And when they were in the relationships at the time, because they were so young, they didn't realize it,
mm-hmm,
that with that behavior. And I think it's something that we should talk about and kind of understand that anybody can find themselves in these relationships. And that's kind of why I wanted my characters to be strong and to be feisty, to sort of show that, you know, it's not necessarily, you know, the quiet, meek ones who are the victims.
Yeah, and I think you've hit the nail on the head because I think that's part of the reason why women don't want to talk about it, because we do perceive ourselves as being, you know, the strong female, you know, who says, oh, as if I'd put up with that. But that's, yeah, also the reason why we should talk about it, because it shows, you know, exactly right, that anyone can be put in this situation and it's not your doing and it's not your fault, but, you know, what to do next. So I think it's really important that even though we don't want to talk about it because we want to be perceived in a particular way, it's so important to talk about it.
Yeah, definitely. So it was very, very important to me that I kind of explored that topic in a really realistic way, but I also didn't want it to be all doom and gloom, which, mm-hmm, is sort of why I think I had Ilya as such a hilarious and feisty and sarcastic character, because I did want that that lightness as well. So with the prank war and
that was good. And I really like what Illy's mum says, and I think this resonates with everyone. She says, everybody's good when they're good. You don't judge a person by that. It's how they act when things aren't good that tells you who they really are. Isn't that just telling?
Oh, I know, definitely. Because, you know, abusers aren't always terrible. Like, they're humans. They can be kind. They can be funny. They, you know, can have excuses for why they lost their temper. And you forgive them because, you know, you're like, well, you can see the good side to them as well, because people aren't all bad. And you kind of have to, I wanted to tell young people that even if people are good, if they have that bad side and that bad side is bad, then you have to walk away anyway.
Yeah, absolutely. I thought the allusion to Macbeth was telling as well. I mean, what a terrible relationship to use as a model.
Yeah, I know. That just kind of, that came to me in a later draft, actually. I sort of saw the parallels there. But it's kind of fun to think about what they're studying in school and kind of, how to integrate that as just sort of an extra layer to the story.
Yeah, it's funny because a lot of young adult fiction uses Shakespeare either, you know, in a play or they're studying English, and I always try and find the parallels, like, oh, why did they choose that Shakespeare play? Someone just said to me once, look, it was just random, okay? I'm like, oh, you sure?
I mean, I was thinking about ambition, and I was thinking about just the three women, mm-hmm, together on the remote outback property, the Illy, oh, her mum, right, and her grandma, yeah, and sort of the whole idea of, you know, women living alone and how, and the wisdom and that come from them, but also the idea that they're crones and witches. I thought that was quite funny.
Yeah, I like that. I like that. I also like the idea of loving and hating someone simultaneously, and it's the mother-daughter relationship that is fraught with these complexities. And I like how she says you can always be trying to protect someone and still sort of hate them at the same time. And I thought, especially growing up as a teenager, that's such a real feeling, isn't it?
Oh, I know. I know. It's, I think it's a really complicated relationship, the mother-daughter relationship, and especially just on that cusp of adulthood where you're no longer, you are mother and daughter, but you're also trying to find your own independence, and that butting of head and those sort of, that battle of wills until you kind of find your new relationship as friends.
It is. I was just thinking as you said that, it's almost that transition from mother-daughter to friends, but you have to go through this horrible sort of time in the middle before you get there.
No, I know.
Now, I love books that portray diversity in characters, and I thought Max was such a lovely character. I mean, I was thinking how many really rich characters of Indigenous background are there in novels, and I came up short. Like, I thought of Jasper Jones, and other than that, I thought there aren't really that many, so I really loved that part of the novel.
Yeah, I mean, it's set in Darwin, so yeah, you know, it would it would be very unrealistic to have non-Indigenous characters, but also my nieces and nephews and great-nephews are Indigenous, and growing up in Darwin, like, the hottest boys were the Indigenous boys. And I'd never seen an Indigenous heartthrob, which was crazy because they're hot as. Oh, I mean, in Australian literature, I'm sure there is, but I just hadn't read one.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I was just thinking about my cheeky, good at AFL, you know, funny Indigenous nephew as I was writing Max, and it came to me pretty easy. I just wanted them to see themselves and, you know, their culture and, you know, just their Indigenous sense of humour and, you know, the love of family and, you know, the way that they tease each other. I just kind of wanted to include all of that in the book and in Max's story.
Yeah, and I really thought there should be more of this in Australian literature because I loved it. And the reason I loved it so much is because I haven't read much of that, which is kind of sad, really. Maybe I'm reading the wrong books, I don't know.
Yeah, there definitely needs to be more of that. Indigenous stories. Thankfully, there's a lot of Indigenous authors that are writing their own stories, which is fantastic, and, you know, our own voices is really important. The Indigenous characters have definitely been overlooked for a very long time.
No, it was good. It was part of the book that I really, really liked. Now, I also liked how important art was, and she had this kind of outlet that helped her release and process her experiences. And I really like what she says, that, you know, art is to pollinate an idea and then you spread them. And I thought that was really nice because someone else was saying, oh, you know, art's kind of pointless because it's just there and someone else has an opinion of it. But I liked to flip that on its head.
Yeah, definitely. I'm not very good at art. I wish I could be. I like coming up with the ideas, but I could never execute them. But I guess I was just thinking about how I feel with writing and just transferred that onto if I was able to paint, which I'm not.
Well, everyone seems, I've spoken to a lot of people about them having art in their books and everyone wishing they could paint because it just seems like, it seems really easy, right? You think, oh, I could do that. And then you try and you really understand how much talent it actually takes to create something that looks good, right?
I know. You look at something and you're like, okay, I can see what it looks like. Like, why can't I replicate it? It's very difficult.
When you watch someone, you're like, surely I can do that. Why can't I do that? What's wrong with my brain and hand that I can't do all that
stuff? I know.
Stuff?
Look, I can hold a pencil. I can see things. It feels as though I should be able to, but I don't know. Somewhere it gets lost in translation.
It does. Between the brain.
With stick figures.
The brain, the eyes and the hand. Something doesn't connect. Now, we haven't given as much love to Yellow. Still a great book. But look, I think because the build-up season just resonated so much with me. Tell us a bit about Yellow and how you came up with that idea.
Yellow is my lovely firstborn. I had the characters of Kira and her mum and her dad in my head for years and years, but I didn't have like a story to put them in. They just sort of, you know, characters just pop up in your short stories. So I was doing that for a couple of years. And then I had this dream about a creepy phone box that was just calling to itself, and there was a ghost on the other side. And just I woke up and there was an epiphany, and I'm like, okay, these stories go together. And and then I just kind of sat down and thought about it for a while, and then I started writing and it just came out. It was very lucky. It was my first book that I ever wrote. So it was just a miracle that it got picked up. But it had been in my head for such a long time. So I kind of felt like it was percolating, and I was sort of writing it in my head for years and years before I actually sat down and started typing.
Yeah, it's funny that, isn't it? You've physically been writing it for so many months or years, but you've actually been writing in your head for a lot longer. I hear that a lot.
Yeah. And those characters were haunting me for years and years and just popping up in stories. And it was kind of nice to write the book and then they finally went away.
As did Illy. So maybe you can start that other book again.
Yeah, I did. So as soon as I wrote the build-up season, I went back to the book I was originally trying to write, and then suddenly the voice came to me, and I've been at it ever since, and I love it. And it was sort of almost as though the book was telling me, no, you have to write this one first. And wow. then it started speaking.
Oh, that's excellent. Is that coming out soon? Have you finished that one?
I've almost finished the first draft, but I'm not sure. Fingers crossed it gets picked up.
Now, I was talking to you about your writing process, and not so much about how you put it together, but where you go to get your inspiration. Tell us about this. I loved this story.
Yeah, it's inspiration, but mostly it's kind of financial. It's very expensive to live in Sydney, and I work as a freelancer, and I find it a lot cheaper to rent my room out and to get really, really cheap flights to Bali. And there's this little hut that I rent out for $300 for the month, and food's like a dollar at the local warung. And I just sit there for a month and write. And even with airfares and accommodation, it ends up costing me almost nothing, and it's cheaper than staying in Sydney.
It's just amazing. It must also give you the space to write too, and the time to write, because I know when you're kind of at home, you've got all these chores and things that you have to be doing.
Definitely, because I'm just there by myself. The internet's really patchy. I don't know anyone there. I just kind of, you go a bit crazy. Your thoughts get very, very loud when you have nobody to talk to, and you go into that strange kind of deep recess of your brain and your imagination where you almost don't see the world around you. You're just sort of focusing inwards in your brain and the story, and I mean, you go crazy. You go absolutely crazy. You become like this hermit person. But the story starts talking so loudly, and the characters almost become, I guess because you've got nobody to talk to, the characters become very, very alive. Mm-hmm. Just so that you have somebody to talk to. You're talking to the imaginary characters in your book. But I find I get so much writing done that way. It just, the stories really come alive.
It's incredible, I think. And you know what I was thinking when you were saying that? I was thinking that Tom Hanks film. What's it called? Where he has that Wilson ball.
Yes.
And you're just sitting there talking to your characters.
basically, I write my books because I'm all alone by myself, and I'm just going, nuts.
Well, it seems to work. I loved the build-up season so much. It's one of my favourite books this year that I've read.
Oh, I'm so glad.
And it just really resonated. It was really real, and it wasn't trying to romanticize or exaggerate. It was just so real and raw and gritty that I just thought, oh wow, this is great.
Oh, thank you so much. Yeah, she was really, really fun to sit in a little Balinese hut with, and she had so many zingers and one-liners that made me laugh.
Tell us about your publishing process. You said that Yellow was the first novel that you wrote, and you were lucky that it just got picked up, even though it had kind of been in your head for years. But tell us about the process of publishing, because I hear that it's a lot of work, a bit of luck, a lot of talent, and all these other things in between. And I've heard the most normal stories that are the traditional way to the most crazy out there stories of getting published. What's yours?
Mine's just Google. It was the first book that I've ever written, but I did have a TV writing background.
Mm-hmm.
So I used to work as a script storyliner for TV soaps. I come up with the storylines, and yeah, I've written short stories my whole life. So I do have, written a lot, and I kind of know story structure moderately well. I have a bit of practice at it, but it was the first book that I wrote. I Googled what to do once you've finished a book, because I didn't think I'd be able to even write a book. And then I finished it, and I was so surprised and happy. And, you know, that would have been amazing. I mean, that was just a dream come true, just to have finished it. And then I was like, okay, well, I should probably Google what to do now. And Google said, look for an agent. So I Googled it, best agent in Australia. And Curtis Brown came up, and so then I looked and had a search for who looked after YA authors, and it was my agent Tara. So then I followed the guidelines and sent it through, the first three chapters in a cover letter, and then she got back to me after a good long while and asked for the rest of it, and then I sent that through, and then after a good long while she got back to me and said that she liked it and then she'd represent me, and then she sent them out to the publishers and Penguin got back to me.
That's a great story.
I know. I sent it out to one person. Apparently you're supposed to send it out to quite a few more, but I really didn't know what I was doing.
Well, clearly you did, and thanks to Google, you got through. What would you do without Google?
It's funny because people ask me, how do you do it? And I'm like, you just Google it.
I love it. I really do, because it's just really traditional, and anyone can do that, you know, because I hear stories of people, they had contacts or they did this crazy thing, but this is just, anyone can do these. You just have to write that story.
The other thing that I did was I really wanted to get published by Penguin, because I used to love just Penguin books when I was younger. Just the used to have, my parents had a whole bunch of the old-fashioned Penguin Orange books.
Yep.
And so I just wrote on a piece of paper and put it next to my bed, Penguin wants to publish Yellow. And then I made my screensaver the Penguin logo, so every time I looked at my phone, it was putting, like, the Penguin energy out into the universe. And, and so I honestly, I do not believe in The Secret or anything like that. It was just a friend recommended that I did it, and I thought, you know, it wouldn't hurt. So I guess that's my other tip.
I don't think you have a choice not to believe in The Secret. This exactly worked for you.
Yeah, so that was really lucky. So I had a few publishers come back, you know, and decline on the manuscript because the agent sends it out to quite a few. But every time they got back to me, I was like, it's not Penguin. And, you know, I've done my little work for the universe with Penguin. So just waiting to hear back from them.
That's lovely. And it is. It's the power of that visualization and self-belief. And somewhere in your brain, you'd read so much Penguin, you just knew what they were looking for.
Maybe that was it.
I like to believe that. It's a bit hippy-dippy, like the mum, right? Like Illy's mum.
I know. Yeah. See, part of me, whenever I go to Bali as well, I do like yoga. And look, I'm a vegetarian. And when I was a teenager, I used to, you know, read tarot cards and do dream interpretations, and I had like bindis and Jesus sandals. So when I was writing the mum, I was kind of like mocking myself as I was writing her. And all of the mum meals that Illy just like rolls her eyes and complains about, they're actually my favorite meals.
Oh, I was thinking that too. I'm like, hey, what's wrong with chia seeds? I'm eating this right now with my yogurt. They're actually, maybe when you wrote the book, I don't know, they weren't as kind of mainstream, but they're kind of just really mainstream now, right?
Yeah, pretty much.
Well, I really look forward to your next novel. Like I said, I so enjoyed the build-up season. I really believe that it should be read by as many young people as possible, and I really think that literature can change the world, and I think this book really has the power to change perceptions or make people leave bad situations maybe a little bit earlier than maybe we did or maybe other people did. So I think that it really has the power to change the world, and that's what I love about literature so much. So thank you so much for your time.
Thank you so much. That's really kind, and I hope so as well.
You are listening to Words and Nerds, talking to your favorite authors.